Guys doing all right tonight? Tonight we're going to look at one of the most controversial sayings ever. It makes more people angry than I think we would like to admit. When I was teaching in California, I was taught a lot of classes on how to share your faith and theology, and that was my main role of just constantly teaching those kinds of classes. And we were actually going over the passage that we are going to talk about tonight, and we started talking about some of the same things that we talked about in the last few days. We talked a lot about faith, and we talked a lot about truth. And one of my students raises her hand to ask a question. Now, there's a few things you got to know about her before I tell you what her question was. She was probably one of the most loving people I have ever known, at least up to that point. She cared deeply for her friends and her family. She wanted justice to be served to everybody. She could not stand to see injustice. She seemed like she was a great lover of Jesus. You'd watch her in chapel sessions. Hand would be raised. She would be sometimes even on her knees in prayer, and you would see this very vibrant faith coming out of her. So for all intents and purposes, from the outside, she looked like she had it together. Her family was a great Christian family. Her parents were fantastic. Her older sister had already gone through the school, and it looked as though she was going to go well on her way to making a huge difference in the kingdom as she went on from high school. So she raises her hand and says, you know, Mr. Kozak, I have a question. I don't understand. She even kind of said, like, with all due respect, and she was trying not to be rude. She said, I don't understand how you could be so arrogant. I was like, wait, what? I was slightly confused. It took me a second. Because it wouldn't be the first time that as a teacher I would be called arrogant, especially in the world of teaching the Bible, because there are many times when you have a group of students together that come together with slightly different beliefs, and I had been used to teaching in classrooms where there could be any number of denominations, sometimes not even Christians in the room. So I understood that sometimes people thought the way that I taught or the way that something came across was like, how can you claim to actually know such things? So I get it. I understand that's a possibility. So I asked her, like, what, explain. I want to know a little bit more about what you're talking about. And she said, if we are going to be loving, if we are actually going to do as Jesus said and love our neighbors, how can we then believe that Jesus is the only way? How can you sit here and tell us that he is, in fact, the only way? And my response to her was very simple. It was, well, I'm sorry, I didn't say it. Jesus did. And she started to argue with me about the Bible and different things. I said, yeah, but you're talking about the same Bible that tells you to love your neighbor, the same Bible that tells you to love everyone, to love God, to treat people with respect, to be a generally good person, the fruits of the Spirit, all of that. You want to do all of that. You want to select all of those things, but you don't want, I am the way, the truth, and the life. Nobody gets to the Father but by me. And she said, yeah. How can you be so arrogant, so exclusive to believe that there's only one way to heaven? Wouldn't it then be more loving to just let anybody in by any direction with any belief system? With any number of chances. And I said to her, I'm sorry, but that's not the truth. And I can't teach you something that's not the truth, even if you don't like it. Believe it or not, she stormed out of my classroom and left shortly after the bell rang. I get a call from her parents, and I'm thinking, uh-oh, I'm in trouble. You never, as a teacher, you never want to get a call from a parent. Because most of the time, they're not telling you what a great job you're doing. Most of the time, no news is good news. This time was different. They come into my classroom. We schedule a meeting. They come out of my classroom. They sit me down. And they say, Mr. Kozak, we just want to apologize. for our daughter. And I'm like, well, why are you apologizing? Because we've been working with this, with her on this for a very long time, and you got the brunt of it. And she's still trying to figure it out. And I'm like, absolutely, she's trying to figure it out. Not that big of a deal. She was not an isolated incident. In fact, she was the norm. I have seen so many students who outwardly look like they are just crazy on fire for Jesus, yet would rather not believe in this one simple verse. I am the way, the truth, and the life, and nobody gets to the Father but by me. Because that's too hard. Because that raises too many questions. Because that raises questions that many of you in this room likely have. In fact, the last time that I was here, the question came right after chapel. Someone came right up to me and asked the question, even after I addressed it, just to be sure that they heard me correctly. And the question is simple. If Jesus is the only way, what happens to everybody else? We have this great, great family that lives next door to us, and they're Muslim. And we've had some great Jesus conversations. We've had some great conversations about faith. But the reality is as much as they are good, kind, loving people, they are not following the way. And there are consequences for not following the way. And that's a little bit of what Jesus starts talking about as he's getting ready. We are all the way through. We are nearing the end of Jesus' life. We are nearing the end of his ministry. And we are getting to the climax of what is about to happen. The disciples are starting to get a little bit worried. They're starting to figure out that something is happening, that Jesus has been a source of trouble for the better part of 3 years, and something is finally going to break. It's going to happen. They can feel it. Judas has already made his way off. He has betrayed Jesus, and he is gone. This is right during the Passover meal, the same Passover meal that was started way back in the Exodus before they left Egypt. And the same Passover meal that we celebrate every time we take communion. And this is what Jesus says. He says, don't let your hearts be troubled. Believe in God. We're in John chapter 14, verse 1. Sorry. I got all ahead of myself there. I got too excited. I'll give you a second to get there. John chapter 14. Don't let your hearts be troubled. Believe in God. Believe also in me. In my Father's house are many rooms. If not, I would have told you. I'm going away to prepare a place for you. If I go away and prepare a place for you, I will come again and take you to myself, so that where I am, you may be also. You know the way to where I'm going. Lord, Thomas says, we don't know where you're going. How can we know the way? Well, that makes sense, right? Wait a minute, there's this house, and you're supposed to know where you're going. Oh, well, that makes perfect sense. So here they are. The Passover meal is finished up. It's a long meal, several hours long. They finished up. They're hanging back. They're relaxing. And Jesus starts talking about leaving. And says, believe in me. Believe that in my Father's house there are many rooms. Because if there wasn't, I would have told you, I'm going to go to a place. You can't come right now, but you know the way. And I'm going to come back, and I'm going to get you, and we're going to go. And Thomas is like, what are you talking about? I don't understand. Where are you going? I mean, my understanding of space and time is fairly limited, so I don't know anything else besides where I could pretty much walk. So where could you possibly be going that I can't go? And what they're hearing is you and I, we hear this idea of Father's house and rooms. And we immediately, most of us, go to our house, rooms in our house, maybe a really large house you've been in where there's lots of rooms and lots of things going on. That's not necessarily what Jesus is talking about. Who's the Father? Where is the Father's house? Well, it's the temple. The temple is the Father's house. That's what they're going to. The Father's house is the temple. Now, if you can imagine, if this was the temple, okay, you'd have this outer court area, and then back here would be one specific room called the Holy of Holies, and there'd be a big curtain, and you can't go in there. Only the high priest goes in there once a year during the Day of Atonement to atone for the sins of the people. But that's the place where God is. That's the place where he dwells. And when Jesus is crucified, the curtain that divides that is torn from top to bottom in half, signifying the separation is now gone between God and man, and we can be back in relationship with him. But there was this huge dividing wall. So when they're hearing there's many rooms in my Father's house and you all get to come, they're going, wait a minute, this doesn't make much sense because there is a divide and I can't get there. So they're like, wait a minute, this doesn't make any sense. And Thomas is thinking, like, I'm going to go someplace. I'm going to hop on a donkey or I'm going to take a walk and I don't know the way. And Jesus says, I'm the way, verse 6, the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. If you know me, you also know my Father. And from now on, you do know him and you have seen him. That takes us all the way back to what John says, is in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The Word is the ultimate expression of God, because if we've seen Jesus, then we've seen God the Father. The disciples are starting to get it. The disciples are worried enough about what's going on with Jesus. They're ready to go to bat. And they're starting to think, wait a minute, something else is going on. Something else is happening. And they're starting to be way less concerned with the things that Jesus does, and they're becoming more concerned with the person of Jesus himself. And what Jesus is doing is he's introducing a tangible reality of the hope that he has promised us. Lord, verse 8, said Philip, show us the Father, and that's enough for us. Jesus said to him, I've been among you all this time, and you don't know me, Philip? The one who has seen me has seen the Father. How can you say, show us the Father? Don't you believe that I am in the Father, and the Father is in me? The words I speak to you, I do not speak on my own. The Father who lives in me does his works. Believe me that I am in the Father, and the Father is in me. Otherwise, believe because of the works themselves. Truly I tell you, the one who believes in me will also do the works that I do, and he will do even greater works than these because I'm going to the Father. Whatever you ask in my name, I'll do it so the Father may be glorified in the Son. If you ask me anything in my name, I will do it. Jesus reveals to them that he is the way. They know where they're going. They know how to get there because they know him. It's not about the things that Jesus does. It's about the person of who Jesus is. It's the same thing we said before, that an understanding truth is not about knowing something. It's about knowing a person. This becomes so much more about the person. All throughout this week, we've seen this transition from these great works of Jesus into people understanding more than just the works of Jesus, but they're understanding the person of Jesus, because the works of Jesus were just designed to point to the person of Jesus so that in Jesus, we could see the Father and understand who he is and that he has come down to do something specific and rescue his creation and reestablish the relationship that was broken in the garden. That's the whole point. And Jesus even takes it a step further and says, but you're going to do greater works than these. What could we possibly do greater than what Jesus did? Because in us, residing in us, is the kingdom. When we believe in Jesus and we decide that we are going to follow, the whole concept of asking Jesus into your heart is really saying to him, I want you to take over. And the king of the universe puts his spirit in us, and the God of the universe works through us to do these unimaginable, amazing things that sinners like you and I can do. Of course, Jesus can do it. He's Jesus. But every time we have compassion for somebody, every time that we shine the light on the truth, every time we stand for truth in the midst of darkness, every time we stand for Jesus when the world tells us not to, every time we do the right thing when the wrong thing is staring at us, telling we should do the wrong thing, but we choose not to, we do it right anyway, that's the things that are greater than what Jesus did, because we are sinners doing those things and he is not. And what he's saying is because of me, because of my power, because of the fact that the curtain is torn in two, because there's a relationship, because I can indwell in you, and because you are part of a new family and you've been adopted, guess what? I am in you, and you can do the things that I did. I don't think it gets much better than that. And this is why I am the way, the truth, and the life is the most, today, the most controversial statement, I believe. I don't think it was then, but I think it is today. Because we live in a world that everybody wants to do their own thing and go their own way and all for it to work out the way they expect it. And what Jesus is telling, if you want it to work out the way it should work out, you need to follow me because I'm the only way. The only way to what? Well, not just heaven. That's part of it. But it's life. It's life right now. It's understanding that there's a way to live the life because he, the one that designed you, is telling you this is how you're supposed to live. And there's only one way to do that. Jesus is the way because he's the one who conquered death. Jesus is the way because he's the one who is bringing redemption and reversal to the stain of sin and death. Jesus is the way because he's the one bringing a new kingdom and a new world order. Jesus is the way because he's the one providing a second chance at life despite what we've done in our past. He's the one who laid down his life so that we could have life and have it to the full. He's the one who provides us safety and security in a world trying to destroy us. He's the one who shines a light in the darkness, the one who defeated death. Therefore, he can be the only one who is the way. That's it. He's the only one. There is nobody else that can provide for you what Jesus does. There's no other path to the life that Jesus has called us to except through him. We've messed this up. We brought sin into the world. We allowed sin to infect everything. But Jesus made a way to undo it all. He's the only one that did. So why is it arrogant for me to say that if Jesus is the one that undid all of our mistakes and set the record straight and gave every single one of us in this room and every single one person that we come in contact with and everybody after that a chance for a second chance, how could it be arrogant for me to say, well, gosh, he can't be the only way? Well, yeah, he can. It only makes sense. Because he's the one fixing it. It's as simple as this. And I wish I had told my student this answer. I was so stunned by it, I don't think I even could comprehend an answer quick enough to grab this answer. He's the way, the truth, and the life because he's the only one who can be. It's that simple. He's the way, the truth, and the life because he's the only one that can be. Nobody else can provide a cure to the root of the problem. Instead of just everything else, every other self-help book, every other religion, everything else just covers up symptoms. Jesus gets to the root of the problem. I don't know where you came into this week. I imagine that some of you came in on fire for Jesus and are following him, doing a great job and doing the best you can, and are constantly improving and doing all the discipleship kinds of things that you should be doing. And that's awesome. I'm sure you screw up sometimes, because we all do. I'm sure we all screwed up today. I know I did. But perhaps some of you came in going, oh, I like Jesus. Camp will be fun. And you were a little unsure. Or reluctant. Or maybe just ho-hummy about it, for lack of a better word. Ain't no much care. That's okay. Maybe there's even some of you who aren't sure about the Jesus stuff at all. Maybe. And that's okay too. I hope, if anything, tonight you hear one thing. And if you've heard nothing else this week, I want you to hear this. Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life. Nobody can get to the Father except through him. And when we follow him, when we accept him as absolute truth, when we put our faith in him, when we decide that we are going to follow him and not ask him to follow us, when we understand that he's the only way and we pursue that way, we are engaging on the most incredible mission imaginable. And it's not just about going to heaven. It's not just about saying, hey, if I do this thing now, or if I do this thing here on earth, that secures me a place in some other place in the world. Yes, that is a thing. But what Jesus taught the disciples to pray is, thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. In other words, the great thing that you and I get to do, the greater things that Jesus talks about that we get to do, is to bring the presence and the kingdom of God into our space right here, right now. Everybody that we get to come in contact with, everybody that you know, everybody that God puts in front of you, you might be the only Jesus they ever meet and the only Bible that they ever read, because that has been the mission that he has given to you, to just be him and to make sure that when people see you, they see him. That's the mission. That's what it means to bring the kingdom of heaven in this space right here and right now. I think that's something we can get excited about. I think that's a mission that we can get on board with. I think that's something that we should prepare ourselves with. And that's also something that's going to be difficult to do. But I'm telling you right now, there is, and I'm sure you've heard this before from some youth pastor somewhere, because they're right, is there is no one more influential in any generation than the next generation. That's just how it works. You guys may be more so. So the question is what are you going to do? What are you going to do with Jesus? He's here. He's always right here. No matter what, when I'm up here, this is where Jesus is. He's right here. He's the way, the truth, and the life. And the question I have for you tonight is this. What are you going to do with him? You going to accept that truth or just call it arrogant? Are you going to accept your mission or brush it aside? If you haven't made that decision, I would encourage you to really pray that through and perhaps make that decision tonight. And if you've been kind of on the fence, maybe tonight's the night you say, you know what? It's time I get off the fence. And it's time I get in the game and I get going. Because this stuff is true. And this stuff is powerful. And the King of the universe is asking me to do something and I need to get on board. So where are you tonight? And where do you want to be when you walk out of here Saturday morning? Let's pray. God, I want to thank you for your word, and I want to thank you for providing us a way. You didn't have to. You didn't have to provide us anything. You just did because you love us. Thank you for that. And thank you for providing us truth that we can understand how to get there. Kind of like Thomas, we can kind of figure out, okay, we know how to get there because we know you. And God, I don't know where everybody is in this room, but I do pray this, that you would compel them to take the next step, whatever that step is. That you would compel them to move forward in their faith, to grab hold of faith for the first time, to start running with Jesus, whatever it is. That maybe tonight would be the night that that momentum begins. I thank you for all the work that you're doing amongst these campers and staff and everybody else here. Thank you for everything you have done and all the stuff that you will do. And most of all, God, we are thankful for the powerful and precious name of Jesus, our salvation. Amen.